Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So If you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Bye. Okay, we're back. We're straightening out some stuff. Today's podcast is titled Write Down Your Vision 2021-2022. All right, we're still in 2021. We got about a couple of months. November, December left. And half of this month, well, this half of this month is gone. But we want to put out there, start writing your vision down now, and then how to move on that. So let's see. We want to play one or two audios to set the tone for that. This something? Okay. Anyway, let me see. Let me get the right. Okay, here we go.
Welcome to Camp Hugay.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had, and he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far? $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas, and I liked this PT boho style with lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I liked that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white and then our kitchen cabinet turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have all of this on the backside came from our house except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator to fit inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for $1 at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it's the one little camper. I got this side from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have four beds in here, and we got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day, and I'd come home, and she'd say, like, you could tell, and I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that, so it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it, but she's making the best of it.
Lauren hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Write Down Your Vision 2021-2022. I played Lauren Nelson those 2 clips because Lauren's now, she did that when she was 11 years old. She's 12 now. So I'm looking at, okay, if this 11-year-old, if an 11-year-old could do something like this, so can we. But before I get into, and by the way, if you're on Blog Talk, go to our page, which is It's My House TV, or you can look up Solar Landlord on Blog Talk. Because we're going to be going from the program notes today on writing down your vision 2021 and 2022. You get a jump on. Well, for some of you, it can help you straighten out some things and bring you solutions that you need right now. And then also give us some momentum going into 2022. Got to share this with you. This is, matter of fact, I wish I had the song in my queue. Mama Told Me Not to Come by Three Dog Night. Just had a weird experience. That's why there was some dead air. Okay. I looked out the window a few minutes ago, and it was this nice, shiny black car in my driveway. You know, I wasn't expecting nobody. Anyway, and so I went outside to see what was happening. So the driver, she rolled down her window, and somebody called, did somebody call for a lift here at, they gave the right address. I'm paranoid now. I can't get my own address over there. So I said, no, I'm the only one here. And I didn't call for a lift, you know. So, and she checked her, you know, order or whatever. And she gave, it was my address, but I didn't order a lift or Uber. So, I said, well, I don't know what's up, but, you know. So, I come back in the house and then, you know, get back on because you guys were listening to dead air, the ones who were here. Then I look back out the window. There's this dude with a backpack, white T-shirt and shorts, baseball hat, standing there talking to the lift lady. I guess he stayed, I mean, it was him that called for the lift. Now I'm thinking, okay, maybe he came from next door, because oftentimes when they're delivering stuff here, they'll go to my next door neighbor with my order, but then they quickly go, all right, wait a minute, wrong address, next door. So that's happened more than a handful of times here. You know, from Chinese food to pizza deliveries to Subway sandwiches and all, you know, that just happens. But on occasion, not all the time, but on occasion. But I'm thinking, because last night I thought I heard something out back, because, you know, I'm on a little bit of quarter acre of land. And it's like, I'm just thinking, did this dude camp in my backyard last night and I didn't know nothing about it? Because I heard something last night, but when I checked, you know, everything looked normal. So, but I don't know if this, you know, because like I said, I talked to the woman for about a minute and a half, probably no more than 2 minutes. But I you know, that's weird. In any event, because, like, see, when I look back out the window, I just, this dude, and then he didn't get in the car right away. You know, I guess he had, I don't know, because he was on his phone and whatever, and then after about 2 or 3 minutes, he got into her car. But maybe this dude came from, I don't know, but it was really weird. Because in my backyard, it's, well, you got nature out there. You got snakes out there. You don't see them that often, but they see you. And anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. Now, write down your vision for 2021, 2022. Reason why I'm saying for 2021, if you got a challenge right now, of any type, financial, business, what have you, it'll be, or any kind, we're going to give some tips out here so you can help solidify that, to help bring into existence what you want to bring into existence. So in our vision framework, we got some basic steps. Step one, imagination. Step two, the vision itself. Step three, how to write down your vision and break it down into goals. Step four, Mars just said that. Yeah. And then I guess we might need to put this out here before we even get into the formal framework, is the distinctions between money and resources. Okay. You can have resources without money, but you can also have resources that include money. And a lot of people try to substitute money, and they're not looking, and they're totally ignoring, or they're blind to their resources, which can be converted into money. So we're probably going to start with that and then get into the, you know, the four basic steps, and then hopefully you can organize something yourself today or this week at the latest, and resolve any kind of issues you might have or challenges, and then get some momentum going into 2022. Now, once again, the reason why I played the Laura Nelson thing is because Laura Nelson did, I mean, she's 12 years old now. She did that with 11. So we're basically, our community-based business is based on what an 11-year-old did. So what we're going to do is take what Laura did, Laura and nine friends, and we'll probably play a Nelly Fuller, please. We're going to play those, and we're going to roll it into our vision. We're going to write it down. Whatever you have, hopefully you'll write yours down because everybody's got something different. And then and get, well, continue. We've already started, but we want to boost things up. Okay. And one of the reasons why I play Move, Mountain, Move is we're not talking about any physical mountains, but we're talking about any mental and or spiritual or psychological mountains that you have placed in your way and how you can remove them. Because you're gonna create some mountains. And that's the only mountains we have to really worry about, or the mountains that we create. So, in any event, and that's what the division plan and all that's about. So, let me say hello to Robin this morning. Good morning, Robin. If Robin's there. No, wait a minute. Who's on Facebook? No, wait a minute. Oh, she's on Facebook. Oh, okay. Let me see. Okay, she's on Facebook. Got it. Okay. All right. Right. We're going to play an ode to the... Okay, let me open up my mic.
Hi.
Okay, all right. There you go. Yeah, Robin, so what do you think about my... You know, I don't know if he was here or he came from next door. I just saw the dude standing at the lift car.
Came from next door?
I'm thinking he might have because a lot of people, a lot of deliveries go there first.
They could have been next door, and for a change, the car pulled up over here.
You know what? Now that makes sense because usually it pulls up over there.
And so that's why he came out from there to come up and catch the guy because he was probably on the phone with him when you saw him.
Yeah, he was there.
So he's probably talking to the guy and tell him, okay, I'm just going to come. I see you. I'm coming up.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, I have a peace of mind now, but play the song.
Yes,
Mama
sir.
Told me not to come because I felt I had one of those moments.
I need you to open up microphone, area code 323,
open.
I believe
it
is.
It's
all
open.
Right, here we go.
There's a new way to collaborate.
Commercial, just a second.
Faster. Smarter.
Let me catch my breath. radio is blasting. Someone's knocking at the door. I'm looking at my girlfriend. She's passed out on the floor. I seen so many things I ain't never seen before. The door is, I don't want to see the world. Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come.
I love Three Dog Night. Love Three Dog Night.
That's my favorite Three Dog Night song, too. All right, so today's podcast is titled Write Down Your Vision 2021-2022. We want to get some momentum going into 2022. So some of the things that we're going to go through with the vision framework steps is imagination, vision, writing down your vision, step four, breaking down your vision. But we want to start off with the distinctions between money versus resources. A lot of people, including myself, at least me, get those two things mixed up. Money can be a resource, but it's definitely not the only resource. And then you have resources that are not money at all, but they can be, and actually money, we should say currency, but I'll just say money for now. But then a lot of people have resources that can be converted into money. So we're going to go through that because that's going to be part of what we're going to be doing here today with writing down your vision. Let's start off with resources. There are three fundamental type of resources. You have natural resources. You have human resources, and you have capital resources. Now, to really simplify that, you know, which it is, all of them are simple. Natural resources would be stuff like rain, trees, any
sun.
Type of vegetation. Yeah, sun. Those are all natural resources. Yeah, those are all natural resources. So, you know, some are renewable, some are non-renewable. But, you know, those are your basic natural resources. Even if we can put it over to you. Now, the second type of resources are human resources. But within human resources, there's a de facto element of natural resource there, too. Because let's say one of the a person could be well, you know what? Let me put it this way. An example of human resources, which is people. Okay. Slavery, I mean, what do humans, you know, humans produce, they offer labor. That's one of our skills. And they also have intellectual property. But human resources was a big business, the human resources business. Some people dabble into, what do you call it, human trafficking. But that's another podcast. But a lot of human resources were used to get wealthy. Now, within an individual, everybody has their own natural resources within them as a human being. You could be short. You could be tall. You could be... It's a lot of, you know, physical things you get. You know, it's like with NBA players, okay? A seven foot person, well, that person being 7 feet, that's part of their natural resource. They're tall. You know, anything, I think, over 6'7 or 6'8, you know, only one, let's see, 99% of the population, I mean, people that are like 6'7, whatever, or taller, that, there's only 1% of the population that is in that category. So, that, you know, it's a number of ways that you can count that as a natural resource. But a person can be 3'11 or 2'11. That's also their human resource, being extremely short like that. Or you could be good at a whole bunch of things physically. You could be a very attractive woman. You know, that attractiveness is part of that woman's natural resource.
Yep, okay. Always works for me.
Okay. So, and there's some things that a business woman can do that a business man can't do. You know, so you're correct, Robin. A business woman who is viewed on a critical mass basis as attractive could get things done that a businessman might not be able to do.
I mean, people come and offer and give me. I mean, they're just like, oh, I don't know what it is about beauty, you know, that attracts people. People want to possess it and be a part of it and all that.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And like I say, beauty, which is an eye of the beholder, but beauty is a natural resource. You know, so if you got it, you know, use it wisely. And then the last resource is capital resources. Now, that's where government-issued legal tender could come in, okay? And government-issued legal tender, dollars, euros, yens, RMBs, francs, all this stuff, pounds, those are a form of resources, but there are other resources that can be converted into those or traded for those. So you have, like if you own a patch of land, excuse me, let me get back to the capital thing. In Asia, okay, let's hold off on Asia and Toyota for a moment. A capital resource is something that you can create or manufacture, and you can exchange it for dollars, money, euro, or whatever. Examples: when Mary McLeod Bethune, who started I think it's now called Bethune-Cookman University, but when she started her college in Daytona Beach, Florida, sometimes the university, the college, the school, they needed money. They needed a resource in the form of money to do whatever they needed to do to pay bills or what have you. There was no other substitute available. So what they would do is they would create a capital resource.
Uh-huh.
Now, the capital resource, one of the capital resources that Mary, and here's a woman who was friends with the First Lady of the United States, Eleanor Roosevelt. So she had ties, social capital ties and political ties inside the White House. What she did, and her people at Bethune-Cookman College, was the capital resource that she and what they created was they used to make sweet potato pies or pumpkin pies or whatever, pies and cakes. I'm going to use the pie example. They used to do the sweet potato pies, and then they would sell it by the slice, a quarter a piece or whatever. And that was one of the fundraising methods that they used to do that. So that sweet potato pie, which they created from scratch because they had to get the, you know, they had to get the sweet potatoes and they had to get the sugar and they had to get the butter. I guess you put cinnamon in that. I guess I don't know.
Cinnamon, nutmeg, butter.
Right, there you go. So they had to take those raw materials and they created a capital asset called a sweet potato pie. And that sweet potato pie became a capital resource, which they were able to trade for quarters, government-issued legal tender. And that way
and
they were able to pay their bills.
And people are still doing that to this day.
You're right. Well, you know, the Amish and Mennonite, they make shoe flower pies. They bake breads, buns.
And the Negroes got sweetie pies.
Sweetie pies out of St. Louis, Missouri. And I think they might have a couple of them. Right. Patti LaBelle, and I've bought three or four Patti LaBelle sweet potato pies. So that's a real simple example of a capital resource. Okay. You don't have to be a millionaire to billionaire to do that. All right. So some people might have the resource. I mean, once again, going to the Chinese menu. If you look on a Chinese restaurant menu, all right, like I said, the primary one that delivers here to my place, okay, they have over 311 items on their menu. 32 of those menus are lunch specials. But they were able to take the raw material of chicken, beef, seafood, and rice and vegetables. Those are the six primary raw materials that they use to create capital resources, or you can even call them capital assets. But what they name them, egg foo young, crispy noodles, sesame chicken, Szechuan beef, Szechuan chicken, egg foo young, shrimp fried rice, vegetable fried rice, and a gazillion other dishes.
You know what? Forget all that. What about the people who make all those containers that they go in?
Well, that's right. That's made from. I get mine delivered. Well, the rice comes in little white boxes of paper, and then the hot dishes come in plastic containers.
Right. So instead of having the restaurant, how about just having the containers that supplies all the restaurant? Most of the restaurants, the food comes in the same containers.
That can count as a capital resource as well.
Yeah.
Because you got suppliers capital. And then you got people that manufacture that. So in writing down your goal or vision, rather, you know, you're probably going to need some way to finance it to bring it into fruition. You know, take note of your resources. Once again, you got natural resources, you got human resources, and you got capital resources. And then if you can take your capital resources, which could buy you the human resources that you need to, do what you want to do with your vision. Now, the last example of, the next example of capital resources, I'm going to go over to China or Asia on this one. And Toyota, Honda, any of them, that manufacture cars or do computer parts or clothes, or everybody on this that's listening to this live stream, you've got something that was made in China. Asia. Something that was made in Asia, because Asia is a big place.
What?
Not everything is made in China. So China went from being poor to a wealthy place because they created capital assets of all kinds, and they sell them around the world. All right, so in your vision, and everybody's got a different vision, but it might call for you to, all right, what can I create? And let me put this out there, because I've been trying to apply this myself for the last week or so, is particularly if your money is tight, start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can do. And then just go with that. Now, let's go to the vision framework steps. Number one, imagination.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got an idea for a vision, that idea is up in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But the Bible says, write the vision and make it plain.
Right. Well, let's go to the next step then in the framework, is, and Robin just said it, whatever idea that you have in your head, get out a piece of paper and a pen, or put it into your phone, a laptop, a desktop, or whatever electronics that you have. I go two ways with it now. I write it down for the muscle memory, and then I also put it on, digitally in my phone, a laptop, a tablet. So write down that vision, because once you write it down, wherever you wrote it down, consider that your receipt and evidence of what is on its way to you. Very important step. That's why it's so important right now. Let me do a parallel of what's happening today. Let's say with Amazon, or anything. All right. For instance, when I order Chinese food, okay, or order anything online, after it's taken the money from my card to pay for it.
Yep.
Chinese food, I usually pay by card, but sometimes I can pay by cash too, because they ask, do you want to pay by cash or card?
Debit.
So I need to remember that for our vision. Anyway, so after I make the order and hang up the phone, within a minute or so, I get a receipt, which is the evidence of my order, which they're cooking up and they're delivering to my front door. Or as in the case of Lyft woman that came to my driveway this morning, I didn't order a Lyft, but somebody had ordered an Uber a Lyft. And they showed up, but I'm sure they got the receipt, which is the evidence on their end. All right, so by writing it down, by writing down your vision, once again, that is your receipt, that is your evidence of things that are in the process that are being worked out that, I mean, you know, whatever you want. All right. Now, the next step is to break down your vision into step-by-step written goals with dates. All right. Now, and don't forget, keep in mind the distinction between money and resources, because I'm sure you're going to have to include this in your... Now, when you originally write down your vision, okay, because you're going to have to convert your vision into a plan. You know, you just can't put out there, you know, I want to make $1 million. Well, no, that's your broad vision. But once again, I said you need to take it, write your vision down, and then break it down by step with goals and dates, because they're component parts to make that $1 million or whatever your goal might be. Getting a new house, getting a new car, whatever it might be. All right. So now let's go to Laura Nelson, 11 years old. And she's only 12 now, but she was 11 when we did that video. So, Laura, oh, matter of fact, you know what? Before I go back to Laura, let's go to Neely Fuller, because we're going to listen to what Neely Fuller talked about. Because, see, that what he did is part of what this is part of what our business vision is going to be. So we're going to break that
because
down.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we moved, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now... those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe 3 rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
Okay. Now, taking a page out of Nellie Fuller, let's look at the resources that he mentioned in that audio clip. And he didn't mention anything about money. But he did mention resources. So the resources that I've heard were, number one, right off the bat, human resources. 7 or 8 people would get together on a Saturday or Sunday after church. So that's the first resource. All right. And typically, it was 7 or 8 people. These are 7 or 8 people that had social capital between them. Okay. And out of those 7 or 8 people, it could be one person that needed a place to stay, that needed a house, that needed a shelter. So they had enough social capital where they didn't need money, or it substituted for money. And he or she got 6 of their buddies together, 7 of their buddies together, and would build a house. Now, another resource among the 7 or 8 people was that somebody had a skill. Skill was they knew how to build the shotgun house. They had the technical knowledge, being a carpenter or a skilled handyman, man or woman in carpentry or whatever, but they had the skill. So your individual skills are a resource. And that's, some of you might be, strapped for cash, but if you got a skill, well, that skill can act as a capital resource for the project. So in this case, somebody, at least one person, had the skill set, making out. So once again, that's another resource. Next thing is, it sounded like they sourced the immediate area. And you know what? Let's extend that to like a 1 square mile radius. Everything that they needed to build that house. And once again, you never heard Nellie Fuller mention anything about money. They knew where to get the necessary materials, how to source them locally, at least within a 1 square mile radius, because he did say these structures were built all across the United States. So people knew how to recognize, maybe somebody took a door and tossed it outside, or lumber. The Salvation Army thrift stores and the Goodwill thrift stores, they've made a business out of stuff that people throw away. They're getting all their inventory. The Salvation Army and Goodwill Industries, they get their inventory for free. online is a site called, what's the name of that site? FreeCycle. Type into your local, at least if you're in the United States, type into your local search engine, FreeCycle. There are people that are giving away all kinds of stuff that you can furnish your entire house and even dress your whole body. But and a lot of that stuff is brand new. You know, some of it, you know, most of it might be used, but some of it's brand new. Shoes, suits, furniture that people have never even worn or used. And they put it up on FreeCycle. You want a computer? Look on FreeCycle. You might get all you have to do with FreeCycle is you got to go to the place and pick it up. But so getting back to Neely Fuller. There was no banks involved with those shotgun houses. And like he said, rather, this was all done by the railroad tracks. I'm going to play it again. Let's see if we can pick up something that we missed.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we moved, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacy.
Okay. So, now you know what? I got a call last week from a white dude that he, and I think he might be with his family, they're near some railroad track down in my neck of the woods. So much for the theory of white supremacy. But I had another dude, happened to be white. He was living at Home Depot. He got a spot somewhere in Home Depot. I guess the employees don't know where he's at there, but that's where he says. He says the mosquitoes were eating him up at night, and he's got all his possessions in two bags. but once again, another white dude. That's why I don't buy into white supremacy. But in any event, so let's go back to, like, write down your vision in 2021, 2022. So the vision that I have, because I had a call, no, not a call, but an interaction yesterday, which was to say, you know what, I need to reduce my vision down to writing so it'll be more concrete, so I can get more traction than I'm getting now. I had a exchange yesterday with a guy that, now mind you, the ad, backyard for rent. That's the ad. And without a tent or with a tent. And so he inquires, is it available? And I send him back something. Yes, it's available. And then I ask him, what is his skill level for camping? All right. So then he sends me back a note and says, I'm a grown man. I know how to pitch a tent, catch fish, you know, do campfires, and I spent most of my life in Maine. He's in Florida now, obviously. So then I responded back, no offense, but you will be surprised at the number of people, men and women, right here in the United States, that don't know how to pitch a tent, that don't know how to catch a fish. They know little or nothing about the outdoors. Being knowledge is limited. I've done some camping, but I was sharing this with Robin yesterday. My grandmother, on my mother's side, who only had a fifth or sixth grade education, but she had seven children to feed, and my grandfather, her husband, was blind. So and money was tight with them now. Coming up, I remember my mother telling me, my mother's bedroom was the kitchen. All right? So my grandmother would have to go out to feed the family when they had nothing to eat in the cupboard. And you got seven children and a blind husband. See, that's why I play the Jamarian Styles things every day. It's probably more for me than you. But she used to go out and catch fish. Now, and Robin, you were right about that. If my grandmother appeared in the flesh today right now and knew that I didn't know how to fish.
Yeah.
And I really don't know how to fish. The last time I went fishing, my stepfather took me when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to string up whatever you call those, the fishing rod. I don't know what kind of fishing rod to buy. If I wanted to buy one, I would definitely have to watch some YouTube videos, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Am I baiting the thing correctly? Is it the right type of bait? What kind of fish are I trying to get? Now, all I know about fishing is if I wanted to catch a whale, which is not a fish, it's a mammal, I would have to go into the North Atlantic. That's about it with me when it comes to fishing. I do not know how to feed myself. If I was on my last legs, weak, tired, and I crawled to one of the lakes, and I'm in a place where there are a lot of lakes. I'm in Florida. I wouldn't know how to make a fishing pole. And you know what? I don't even know if my grandmother more than likely made her fishing pole. No one
heard. And she taught each of her children how to fish, but none of her children taught their children.
Right.
Wow. And that's by design. They didn't get there by themselves, but just across the whole United States, families, black and white, around the globe have the systematic dumbing down. It's by design.
Exactly.
Wow.
And this is a woman with, like, once again, a fifth or sixth grade education. That was it for my grandmother. But
now,
she fed seven
children. Now look at the contrast. The children and the grandchildren probably have a higher education level, maybe even some college, right? But look at, they have no practical knowledge and skills.
Right.
Things that would really allow them to survive and perpetuate their legacy. Oh, we're talking about academia. Sorry.
Right, that's true. So anyway, getting back to this guy. So, you know, he's from Maine. And I wrote him back. I said, all right, see, you have a skill level that most people in the United States don't have. And that's why I had asked that question. But what the red flag for me with him, and he decided, you know, he didn't want to come look at the backyard, and I'm so glad that he said that, because I live by a rule: rejection is God's protection. Because I'm the thing that the red flag that stuck with me. I'm a grown man. See, me and he's, you know what? I'm not even gonna say
that is
who he was.
Obvious.
Right. So I, you know. So that got me thinking, well, you know, the dude's a biker. Now, I don't have any problems with bikers, you know, on a social level, and really on even a business level. But I'm thinking, you know what,
some of my best friends are bikers.
I'm looking at, you know what, he's not part of my market. I really don't know that demographic. And I really couldn't service that well, that market that well. So I said, you know what? I got another tract, which is 4 acres large.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm thinking, because once again, part of the fundamentals is start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. Mm-hmm. So the idea came to me is, you know what? I've been doing this almost 8 years now. So I've had conversations with a lot of people who are bloggers and vloggers. They're online people. And none of them have ever said I'm a grown-ass man or a grown-ass woman.
Yeah.
Their identity is intact. So I said, you know what, let me connect with some bloggers and vloggers that I already know as my warm market. And the four-acre tract, I call it Earth Wealth E-Village, which stands for Energy Village. You can also have it stand for E-Commerce Village.
Okay.
So now I've got pictures. I've had it for 6 years. So, but now it's time to you know, have it develop into a viable entity. So a sustainable entity. Cause, you know, instead of me after coming out of my pocket. So I've got one aerial view picture, and I got, you know, four, five, six other videos, and then a video. One video. So I said, you know what, I'm going to, because, you know, I don't want to run into another one of these guys. Because I'm looking at, okay, I'm not wired to service the biker demographic. Nothing wrong with, but that's not my lane. My lane is basically people that on the grid, but it's kind of tight for them at times being on the grid. And then you got bloggers that might need a venue to hold events, to meet part of their audience. Most of them are entrepreneurs in some kind of way. So I figure, okay, on this 4-acre tract of land, okay, we can put up some extreme housing. Because what I consider what Laura Nelson did, I consider that extreme housing. She took a camper and pimped it out. It looks good. It's aesthetically pleasing. So I'm sure, you know, I can take a city slicker that from New York City to Los Angeles, and they would feel comfortable being in a nice, quiet setting of this 4 acres. Nobody's bothering them. They can hold meetings. They can do a whole lot of positive things. And then in a relaxed setting, they can retreat to their, I mean, I'm looking at converted. Ever see that TV show Pimp My Ride? That's the same thing I want to do with the extreme house that we're talking about. Converting campers, converting horse trailers into livable, chiqued out units. That's part of the vision I have for Earth Wealth Energy Village. It'll be a place where, you know what, you don't want to leave. Or you don't have to leave, because if you need to buy something, we'll have a little general store there where you can buy, you know, the basics or whatever. So we're soliciting ideas. And then eventually we're only going to probably, you know, be able to take on about 15 or 16 pioneers. But I've got the land already. So that part of the vision is tangible. It's here, it's right now. But like I say, I'm going for the blogger, vlogger, or entrepreneur that would like to be part of a chill out community. Now so we probably won't get it during this show, but we're going to start it during this show. So that's part of the vision I have. Okay. That's part of the vision I have for Earth Wealth Energy Village. Matter of fact, there is a person I know, I just know her online and Skype conversations that we've had. She's from Kenya. And now she just landed into the United States for the first time today. She's probably in Atlanta. She's up there for about 10 days. And then she'll go to some other places here in the States. She's a farmer. So if you have guests, you know, and you happen to be in that part of Florida, we're in Earth Wealth Energy Village. It's in northern Florida, half mile away. 29 miles away to be exact from Valdosta, Georgia. That's the largest big city to Earth Wealth Energy Village. It's 90 minutes away from Jacksonville, Florida, and probably 2 hours away from Orlando and Disney and all that, and a 10 or 15 minute drive to a state park here in Florida, which has got some crystal aqua marine bluish green water. The first time I saw it, if I wasn't there in person, I would have sworn by picture somebody airbrushed it. So we got deer, We got wildlife. You know, deers won't bother you or anything like that. But we can do a lot of entrepreneurial things there. So that's but I would like to. Now, what I'm doing is I'm soliciting ideas for people. And we've had at least three people, actually three people from the It's My House audience that have been there. One of them is Viata, who most of you know. And then there were two others. But five, because I don't tell a whole lot of people where this place is. All right. But in any event, and really when it comes to pictures, only two people in the It's My House audience knows about it. I mean, have seen any pictures of this place. Although, you know, I did post it on It's My, what do you call it, the It's My House Facebook page, It's My House TV Facebook page. There are pictures there and a video. So, I'm not, you know, no address with it, but in any event, so Robin, 4 acres, and for to give people more of a visual, an acre is about the size of a football field. So we got 4 acres, wooded acres with natural clearings throughout. Based on what you've seen of the pictures thus far, and if you went on Patreon, we have a video. I took all the pictures. I took the video. You can hear my voice in the video. The only picture I didn't take is the aerial view of the 4 acres, where you can see it from above. But everything else I did. So, Robin, based on, as a matter of fact, well, what's your vision?
Well, I see the vision of building, teaching people to build on it. I see people building and owning their own, as well as leasing from us and reselling all of that, as well as having my own little personal abode on there. That's what I see.
Okay. Now, any ideas on
an event center for the community? Uh-huh.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That makes sense. Now, what about, what could we do to make it a highly attractive place for people to jump in their cars and, like, somebody like, you know, Freedom Doors Ministries, they're 90 minutes away. So where they can come and meet other people or host an event there, or because you're clear across the country. So what could we have there where, you know, people come from all over the world to come to Disneyland. So we want to have.
You could have like a Jubilee or like some sort of bazaar market where they could come and have their podcast from a live setting. They could have merchandise and whatever, have a table vendors and generate some income like that. Maybe even get together and build a store. And now you guys are operating a store with your various wares from the different blah, blah. I mean, it can just grow any way you want it to.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got Chicago, Al Zora. She hasn't been on here a while, but Al Zora is a seamstress. She makes quilts. Well, one of the profit centers of a lot of Amish women is, and some men, is, you know, Amish quilts sell pretty well. That's so. Anyway, people. So now, what we'll be doing? I mean, we got about 30 more minutes left, but what I'll be doing today, and I've got a journal anyway, where I've written some of this stuff now, but I'm gonna make it more concise and concrete based on a vision, and then break it down into steps, because one of the tools that we have, once again, some of the unifying the three of the unifying principles that I'm operating off of is start where you are. All right, I'm already in Florida. We already have the 4 acres. We've had it for 6 years now. Okay, now it's time to do. So the next thing is use what we have. So now it's time to put the 4 acres into use. We're in the pioneer stage. And I already know a lot of people are not cut out to be a pioneer. Because, for instance, now, Viola Robinson, she's actually been there. Okay. And the thing that she said the day that she was there, and I agree with her on this, is to attract the people that I want to attract, which would avoid, which I don't have to deal with what I dealt with yesterday, people with grown asses. We have to make it a little bit more, we have to make it comfort, we have to factor in comfort and convenience. Let me address the comfort part first. There's a state park, actually there are probably at least two state parks. One's like a 10 or 15 minute drive from there. Then there's Suwannee River, you know, way up on the Suwannee River. That's near there too. So we got two state parks near there. One's a 10 minute drive, 15 minute drive at best. We got
so
two
I
state
would,
parks. It's
I
near.
I would make a campground where people could camp there, and then I would do tours to the Suwannee River and the lake over there. I would put in an amphitheater so that we and campfires, so we can do campfires and blah 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 like that. Okay,
right,
and retreats. There you go.
Right, well, we can do a lot. We can do a lot of retreats for a lot of people, and but she's right. So we got to do some things there, so it'll for comfort. Now, as far as convenience, like so, you got two state parks near there. If you need to get to Walmart or any place like that, it's probably a 20-minute drive, if that. But I haven't gone to Walmart up there. When I go up there, I just go up there. It's near Interstate I-10. So if you live in California, just get on I-10 and keep straight, and you can get to our place. It's also near I-75. So it's near two. Those are two interstates that are nearest to it. 90 minutes away from there, you got Interstate 95. But 95 intersects with I-10, and you can get on go to 95 to I-10, and head over to our place. So there's some other things around there that we're gonna. When we organize it, then we can, you know, just print it. Right now, we're just, a lot of things we're talking about, we're going to have to actually reduce down to writing later this afternoon. Now, I've got some things written, but I'm making it into something concise. Let's see, what else about the place? But in any event, yeah, so that guy yesterday, the biker, I consider him an angel. Angels are messengers. So the message I got is go with the demographics of your last 7 years. It's almost in December, in a couple of months, it'll be 8 years for its miles. So go with the demographics that you know and have had relationships with for the last 7 years. So, and then also know within that, you got some people that have a pioneer mindset, and then you also got people that, you know, they want the comfort and convenience on a high level of it. And then we will have people that are naturally in between. But, and we got to stick to our off-the-grid policies, because part of this is, let's say you spend a weekend with us or a week with us and you're watching your flat screen TV, you're talking on your smartphone, whatever food you cook, it won't be tapped into any power source. I mean, no grid source. We'll introduce you to different ways to cook food. Like, one of my favorite hobbies is solar cooking. So while you're down here, if you stay for a week, you will have a solar cooked meal, at least one. You'll have at least solar cooking, because you can bake cakes and cupcakes and all that. You can make soup stews and all that. And then there's what I call laser solar cooking. I can cook a steak in under 2 minutes. I can do a hamburger done well in a minute. Solar cooking. Teach you how to do it within 1 to 2 minutes. Some days when we do, you know, it might do a, matter of fact, I can even do it. This first solar meal I cooked, it was like 36 or 38 degrees outside. I was in Washington, D.C. I cooked a turkey burger. I put it out in my solar cooker. Came back about 40, 45 minutes later. It was done, and it was hot, but it wasn't burnt.
Mm-hmm.
So not only will we cook solar cooked meals, and then we'll get somebody like Chef Amadeus down.
Yeah.
You know so he can do what he does.
He's on a tour right now, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what we're going to have, a lot of these powwows that we've had on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube and Facebook and all that, we can sit down and have face-to-face. I hope people don't get mad and fight each other, though. But we can have face-to-face conversations to come up with solutions when it comes to topics like reparations, starting industries, anything, you know, topics that we've all talked about over the years. Now we can have those. And, of course, we might have to bank, because, you know, politics. You know, some of my friends that I've had for the longest time, I thought about it the other day, some of the people that I've known the longest and we're friends, we've never talked about politics. So that can be kind of a dicey topic. But in any event, I'm starting with my warm market, because I don't want to deal with a market of people that I don't know when it comes to this. That interchange I had with the guy on the you know, who, you know, I'm looking at Eric. You know how to fish. You know how to pitch a tent. He would fit great at this place. But
yeah.
Let's go back to my grandmother. If she was living today, she probably said, wait a minute, I need to take you out to the – she would probably insist on teaching me how to fish. And I go ahead on and learn. I go out and learn it. And I've experienced a cultural thing like that before. I was in Barbados once. Well, actually, about three times. But this one time I was out in Barbados. The person I was with got drunk. So drunk, this is a woman too. And so drunk, I had to basically carry her out of the concert hall.
Oh, that's not fun.
And embarrassing. Anyway, so when we got to a van, because she drove a van, the van stick shift. I don't know how to drive a stick shift. I only took one lesson on a stick shift. I'm an automatic guy. That's how I was taught. Well, I was learning how to drive by private driving instructors, weekend driving school, the test in Washington, D.C., for a driver's license, all were on automatic. Every car I had was automatic. Most of my friends drove automatic. My stepfather, he had an old truck that he got at an auction. That was stick shift. He gave me one lesson. I didn't really catch it, and I wasn't interested in trying to catch it after that because I was just used to the comfort and conveniences of automatic. Okay. However, now, this was a cultural difference. In Barbados, as a matter of fact, two of her friends, I asked them, could you help me get her home? Man, they looked at me like I was from Pluto because I didn't know how to drive a stick shift. Because where they're from, everybody was taught on a stick shift. Not automatic. So my only solution was, thank God I had some cash American dollars in my pocket. I put her in, well, she was on the stoop. I couldn't even get her in the van at the time. So I went back up to the concert hall and then say, look, can somebody give me a ride? You know, it's like a 10-minute drive from Weibo. And I'll pay you $20. Now, in time, and it still might be today, for every one Bayesian dollars, a dollar multiplied, every one American dollar multiplies by two in Barbados. I don't know if it's still like that today, but it was like that then. So it was like, okay, he'll take an American 20, but it's 40 in his currency. So, man, first person I asked, bam, all right. He was Johnny B. Quick. So we walked back down where she was. He got his car, and I got her into she was fighting it. She was fighting me to get in the car, and you're harassing me. Drunk as fucking shit. Drunk as a skunk. But that was the alcohol talking. So we got back, home and whatnot. And then, because her daughter lived with her, good thing her daughter was of age. And I explained to her, everybody saw that she was sick. I'm not sick, drunk. And the daughter and her boyfriend went on, I gave them the keys, and then the boyfriend took her daughter, his girlfriend, and retrieved the van, which had it. Well, I don't know, Barbados, they were kind of laid back. I don't know if they would have told, but it didn't get told or ticketed or whatever. But that was So that's why I say, you know what, let me deal culturally with people that, and I'm multicultural, but I don't know if a bunch of bikers or people who grew up in a different comfort zone. So we're taking the 4 acres and we're finding a middle ground where a New York City slicker can come and you'll have running water, you'll have your internet connection, so you can do your cell phone, you can watch your Netflix. There'll be other people. There won't be a whole lot of other people around, but there'll be other people around. We're finding the middle ground, and then, you know, those who like it. But that you know, it, so that angel yesterday, whoever you are, thank you so much. And hey, now we might meet, Mr. Barker, we might meet, because see, I'm willing to go to Sturgis, South Dakota. I'm willing to go to a biker's rally in Sturgis, South Dakota, and I probably won't have any problems at all socially. But I already know that the Sturgis demographic might not fit into my world. So we found a middle ground. So in any event, so anyway, that's the general vision. What we'll do this afternoon is we'll put it on paper, more concise, and then match up certain things with the visuals that we already have, and then we'll do some live events from there, whatever. So, anything else, Rob, you want to add to that?
No, that's all I have for today.
Okay, well, that's good. But if you know how to fish, there are plenty of fishing holes there. There's hunting there for those. There's no hunting on our place, but there are other tracts of land which I have nothing to do with. I can find out for you. If you want to go hunting, game hunting, there are places near there where you can do that. If it's in season, we'll have that information for you. We can take a road trip out of that place to Disney if you want to go to Disney. Eatonville, Florida, which is a historic black township over 100 years old. If you want a field trip to go to that place, we can arrange for you to go to Eatonville. That's definitely a day trip. But there's plenty to do right there in a little pocket that we have, particularly if you you have some connections in Florida. It's nothing like if you've been to Miami, Orlando, or Tampa. This part of Florida is nothing like those locations. It's rural. Quiet, like I said, you're going to see deer when you're there. You're going to see deer. And for some of you, it might be the first time that you've ever seen a deer in person. No alligators up in this part of Florida. And to my knowledge, no bear sightings. You might see a rabbit or something like that, but you'll probably see more deer than anything else. So, and then week by week, I know we'll be tweaking the vision because, like I said, I want to tap into. I'm looking at this place as it'll be a transition. People that or transitioning from living on the grid, you might not want to go off the grid completely, but people that are transitioning, people that might need to start over, people that are looking for sustainable or affordable housing, that's the, for lack of a better word, playground that we'll be setting up. And some people, like I was talking to a friend of mine, well, I'm not even going to go into that conversation, but if you want to obtain debt-free living or feel empowered economically, like I said, a lot of things that we'll have at this place will promote that. Also, we'll be teaching people how to set up their own family compounds and once we get things going, just like these podcasts or any podcast, a lot of the ideas are going to come from people who actually are there. All right. So, like I said, Viata's been there. So the one contribution that she's made is, okay, it comfort and convenience. So we'll all, like I said, we're in a pioneer phase now. Because I already know some people, you're not going to get them there until, I mean, a lot of people just base things on comfort and convenience. You know, where can I go get my batteries? Where can I go get toilet paper? Where can I go get me a hamburger? That's where a lot of people are conditioned. And every town at one time, Houston, Texas was started by two brothers and one of the guys' wives. Now it's over 1 million people that live in Houston. You know, Las Vegas started out in the desert.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the historical black towns that we've covered over the years here was started by, one or two families. And some of those towns, one of which, you know what? One of the trips that we're going to arrange for people that want to come down is we're going to do a day trip to not only Eatonville. Here's my vision for this. We're going to take a day trip starting from Jasper. That's where our vicinity of 4 acres. We're going to take a trip from there to Rosewood. We're going to take a trip to Rosewood and see what's left of there, which is just a plaque on the highway. We're going to take a trip to Rosewood. Then from Rosewood, we're going to travel to, that might end up being a two-day trip. But then we're going to take a trip to Eatonville, which is 6 miles outside of Orlando. And that's a historical black town. That way, people can see what black folks can do, particularly with Eatonville. A group of black folks got together over 100 years ago with no internet connection, no government intervention, no entitlement programs, and they got together and built it, and that town is still exists to this day. So that'll be one of the activities that we have. And then maybe you might then you can see what's possible. So any event, but I'm going to whittle my vision down to like a mission statement, which would be one sentence long, and then a vision statement, which would be one sentence long, that corresponds – We always go over time here, so I'm going to open up the phones here in a minute. What corresponds with that, and then already on my phone, on my phones, on my tablets, on my laptop, I have pictures. I've held this. The vision's on there. So now I'm going to tweak it because now, all right, let's have a new updated picture of, okay, here's how we're going to have it sectioned off, and, okay, we can have a community center here. We can have this and that there. We can have a we can do some farming here if we wanted to. But we'll grow something there. So, anyway, that's that on. So, anyway, getting back to you. So, for 2020, for the rest of this year, which is, what, 2.5 months of that, and definitely for 2022, is write down your vision and then break it down into steps, and that way you'll have goals. And just take, just little baby steps, whatever works for you. And then you got some momentum going into next year, whatever that goal might be. And like I say, the three simple things that we'll be following, which I played the audios God knows how many times, is we'll be looking at actually four. Laura Nelson, the 11-year-old that bought a camper on the cheap, because basically that's our budget. So if 11-year can do it, we can do it. The next example will be Jamarian Styles. And I just sent him a note this morning. So I'm going to see. I sent him one on YouTube. What do you call it? Instagram, but he didn't respond. So I'm going to see if I found another way to reach him and see if we respond to that. So Jamarian Styles, if he did what he did, and basically what Jamarian did is he just tried. He tried out and he made the team. He didn't play much, but then he eventually got in the game and he scored. So I'm looking at, all right, if Jamarian can do it, I don't have any excuses. The next example, it's, all right, I bought the land by myself, but I'm not going to make it into a village by myself. So, we got some, part of my nine friends is right here in this audience. Robin, Pianchi, everybody, Beasley, all and a whole lot of other people. So those are part of my nine friends, or it might end up being 99 friends. I don't know. That's another reason why we play that video. So, like I said, we're working with a warm market, and there's some things that, but the one thing we don't have to worry about is the location. That's the one thing we don't have to worry about. So there's some things I'll still be doing solo because I'm in pioneer phase, but we'll be, I don't have the whole written. Actually, I've got parts of the vision written down already, but I want to put it in just one simple, concise plan. For me, will be less than a half a page. Because, like I say, the mission statement will be one sentence. It won't be a long sentence either. One sentence long. The vision statement will be one sentence long. And then, I'll take some. There's some steps that I've been instructed to, to take on the conversation that I had with somebody last night. So today, that's my primary mission for today, is to reduce that down and then go into action. One thing that we've already started doing is we'll be doing two live streams a day. And two open houses a day. So we're doing that from physically where I'm at right now. So that'll give us like 80 exposures a month. The two open houses a day, that's meant for people that are boots on the ground, and we, you know, well, we got this housing available. Are you looking to rent or are you looking to buy? So we'll have two, you know, one in the a.m., an a.m. open house and a p.m. open house. That's the new habit, and that's part of our vision. That's part of the vision. So I was able to do that yesterday, and then we'll carry it over today. And just like with Blog Talk, I knew in order for me to make it on here, I had to do it at least 5 days a week. So when I started doing that, before I knew it, I had 40 programs in the can. And then that gave me the motivation to keep on going. And now it's almost 8 years. So I'm using the same strategy with that. All right, two live streams a day with audio visual, and then two open houses a day, 1 a.m., 1 p.m. So... And then we'll pick up some other ideas from other people. So, 314, your mic is open.
L.A. and Robin.
Good morning, sir.
Hello.
Kind of remind me of Batman and Robin. L.A., you ever thought about having...
Say that again now, because you dropped. Thought about having. Having's the last word I heard.
A marina.
No, I have. You talking about a boating marina? Hello? Robin, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Pianca, you there? All right, Pianca, your light's on. But I can't, if you're talking, I can't hear you. All right, you're talking about a boating marina?
Can you hear
marina?
Me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You talking about a boating marina?
Yes.
Haven't thought about
a
it.
A boating. Yeah, that'll work.
I know what they are.
Time.
And I know there's a place up in Alaska that I would like to visit, and quite a few people in that town, they live at a boating marina.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to find...
How far are you from the ocean?
I would have to find a pet...
The
Gulf of Mexico... The Gulf of Mexico is about 45 minutes from where I'm at right now. That's to the west. That's the
don't you have a lake nearby?
Oh, we got a bunch of lakes by here, yeah. Hey, we got
Hello?
A bunch of lakes around town. Yeah, can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah. I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now? Yeah. We got quite a few lakes where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
and
nice.
And some of those have
boats. Yeah, travel right on down to Barbados.
Never thought about that.
Bermuda. We used to fly to Bermuda.
I haven't been there yet. You know, I never thought about that, Pianca, because I've got some neighbors with boats, and then there's a bunch of lakes in the town where I'm at. And the next town over, they got probably more lakes than they have here. And then if you go out to Tampa, St. Pete area, if you got a boat, I guess you can go up there to Pensacola, around the Gulf of Mexico. New Orleans, Texas, on to Mexico. Then if you go in another direction, you can go to the Florida Keys, And I guess out to Jamaica or some of the, you know, the Bahamas, or I never thought about it. I'm sure there are people doing that already.
Yeah, we used to fly to Bermuda.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta have your passport and check in at U.S. Customs when you get there. They'll want to check your boat. They used to want to check our airplane. Make sure we ain't smuggling drugs, I guess.
Now, how do they? I guess you got the U.S. Coast Guard that monitors people that, you know, that take leisure trips. I mean, like, so you could live in Florida, but you want to go to Jamaica, which isn't far. Jamaica's only like 90 miles away from the United States. So I imagine you got a bunch of people that are doing that already. But is the Coast Guard out there to monitor that or what?
Yeah, that's why they call it the Coast Guard.
Okay.
They can enter your ship. When you fly over the ocean, you have to have, depends on how far out you go.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have, of course, your life preservers for each passenger.
Okay.
And if you go out further enough, I think 100 miles, you got to have a flotation device, like a boat, a little flotation device you can get into, a raft.
Okay.
But,
well, what do you know about marinas? Because I know nothing about marinas other than how to get on a boat. And that's about it. I mean, I've driven a boat once. It was like, it wasn't a Boston Whaler, but it was a motor boat.
Marinas are usually situated on off a body of water.
Mm hmm.
And boats pull up in the slough and dock. The dock is nothing more than a big flotation. So it can rise up and down with.
Hello?
And you. Well, I'm still here.
Okay, yeah. It,
you hear me?
It went out for a moment. Yeah, I can hear you now. Now, all right, who. I wouldn't be. I guess. Well, you know what? I'm gonna look up online. What do you do? How's the real estate on that? You mean docks for sale, or you find a patch of land? I know some of people I know down here. They have a piece of property where they've built a dock where they have their boats. I've seen some houses down here like that.
Yeah, you can buy land like that. You gotta have roads that lead up. Main roads are passable roads somewhere close there. You can have it in a marsh level. Of course, you got to get EPA approval and all this stuff. And like I say, it's fed by a main body of water, usually the ocean or maybe a river.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a slough. You know what a slough is?
I've heard of a slough, but I'm...
Yeah, a slough is like an inlet. Yeah, it's like a little inlet that's cut in the land. It's usually calm. Yeah, it's usually calm, and because it's cut into the land, it's protected from big waves and stuff like that.
Right, I've seen those around here.
Then you can build it however you want to build it. You can build it out into the water. It all stay connected
now,
together. So you can.
Wherever county that would be in, you have to check with zoning on that first.
Well, you ain't got to worry about no zoning because ain't going to be no houses built in no slough.
Okay.
No buildings. You may have a little office. A restaurant. That's for people who like to do that stuff, L.A. Robin's scared of
the water. There's a lot of people down here that like that. And like I said, I got neighbors who have boats. And also, what do you call those things? Hydrofoils. I guess that's when they go to the
Alabama. Like a houseboat?
For this. No, a hydrofoil, you know, one of those things that's got like a big fan on it.
Oh, you talking about a hydroplane.
Yeah. Oh, that's what they call a hydroplane.
I rode one of them down in Florida one time. I think my daughter would be
born. Comes through my neighborhood. But that's for people that go down to the Glades.
there's a lot of the Everglades.
Now, there's a neighborhood about maybe 5 miles away from me. Might be one closer. Where they have a slough, like you just said. Now I know what you call it. And, you know, they got their little dock there. And there's two lakes, I'm thinking. There's one slough, and then there's another one on a lake. But, you know, they got their boats right there. So in St. Mm-hmm. Petersburg, I ran across a – well, this is more – now, this leads out to the Gulf of Mexico, though. So that wasn't a private one. But some people here have their own private, I guess what you call them, sloughs.
Yeah.
But I never thought about it, though, but I would – well, one project at a time. I got to get through this one.
Yeah, you got to get through that one.
Yeah.
Gave you some good suggestions yesterday.
I wrote them down and talked to somebody this morning, and I'll be back at it again this afternoon.
You don't have to get the survey first. You just do like we told
no,
you.
No, I'm taking your advice on that drawing first. So that's one of the things I'll be doing today.
Is your property staked? With markers?
Yeah, I got it staked out.
Concrete markers at each corner?
No, they're not concrete, though.
You know, you can get coordinates off of that. They got a device that you can put on a little app you can put on your cell phone.
Let me write this down.
And you can get your coordinates by standing at one corner, or you can stand at all four corners.
Okay.
You need to mount it on a tripod.
Okay.
A camera tripod.
Okay. Let's see. I'm writing. Can you want to talk? I'm taking notes.
Yeah, get a longitude, latitude app that you can put on your phone. Like a one-on-one. And let's see what the heck the battery is. On my old phone. I haven't put one on my new phone. You get a camera tripod.
Okay. Camera tripod. I've seen those.
And you set it up right over that peg. And get your coordinates. And I told you yesterday to physically measure that to get you 300-foot tape. To physically measure that the distance from one peg to the other.
I got to buy it. I got to buy that. Cause
Do the calculations off of the coordinates.
Okay.
Then you know what to do when you lay it out on your drawing. as far as dimensions is concerned. All you need is straight lines, parallel lines. That's perpendicular to each other. Then you'd be ready to go, L.A.
All right, I'm writing down what you said here.
But you should have a plot, don't the county?
Yeah, I've got a
recorder deed. Recorder deed should have that already plotted out. I check with them first and let's get a copy of it. Then go to a print shop and have it blowed up.
I'm gonna call them.
That'd be cheapest way to do it.
Call recorder deed.
They send you a tax bill, don't you? Don't they?
Every year.
Well, your information is located on a tax bill. Your locator number. Go to the recorder D's office. Give them that locator number until you'd like to look at the plot plan of the area.
What?
I'd do the area. I wouldn't do just your lot.
Right.
Then you take your dimensions off of that.
All right, that's what I'll do. All right. And all right, I'm doing that as soon as that. Matter of fact, I'm going to take that. I'm going to act on that right now. Hey, I'm going to call right now. Yeah. Thank you, Pianchi. Thank you, Robin. Thank you all. I'm going to let me get on the phone and do this now. So I will not...